Did you know the risk of cancer does not stop at the scene of a fire? Firefighters are constantly exposed to diesel exhaust fumes and other airborne toxins that get trapped inside the station. Protect yourself with MagnaGrip. Through the combination of MagnaGrip exhaust removal systems and AirHawk air purification systems. Learn more at MagnaGrip.com. This fire engineering podcast is made possible by Tenkata Protective Fabrics. The global leader in flame-resistant fabrics, Tenkata Protective Fabrics enables millions of people worldwide to be great at what they do. Generations of industry professionals serving in the fire service, industrial, and military industries rely on Tenkata Fabrics for safety, comfort, and confidence. From the harshest working conditions to the welcoming site of home, Tenkata recognizes the people they're protecting are unique individuals whose lives extend beyond work. Supporting a world of evolving needs, Tenkata's innovations lead the way in user-centric design, technology, and sustainability around the globe. To learn more, please visit TenkataFabrics.com.
Hey, Halton here, and I just want to take a few seconds to remind you we're just 4 weeks away from FDIC. Hot classes are filling up fast. There is space left in a few of the workshops. Please sign up now. Don't miss out on an opportunity to get CAPC credit, attend some of the greatest events in firefighting this April. Go to FDIC.com.
Hi, welcome to Fire Ground Strategies and Other Stuff from the Street with Anthony Avillo and Jim Duffy on Fire Engineering Talk Radio, where firefighters come to share their knowledge, their ideas, their opinions, and most of all, have a little bit of fun at the same time. So stay tuned and enjoy the show.
Hey, 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 welcome to Fire Ground Strategies and Other Stuff from the Street, the FDIC Month Edition, April 2022, and a big thank you to MagnaGrip and Ted Katie. Listen, as you know, at the end of our little blurb there, we talked about having a little fun. Anthony Avillo and I are about fun, so I think you'll find our show a little unique. Tonight we have Brian Zeitz with us, a guest from Missouri, and he's going to share some conversations with us. Chief Avillo, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Listen, it's an absolute pleasure to have Zeitz from Missouri with us, man. It's all good. And like you said, it's all about fun. It's like, you know, it's like the Springsteen song, Blinded by the Light. Wheezing and sneezing, the calliope crash to the ground. But also,
wow.
Brian, great to have you aboard, man. Great to have you aboard.
I'm not sure.
Brian, how are you doing?
Well, after that, I'm doing okay. I'm not exactly sure on this kaleidoscope and Anthony's concert talk. It's amazing. It's amazing.
It's a calliope. A calliope.
I love it.
It's a calliope.
So,
it's
Brian.
Blinded by the Light by Springsteen.
A Jersey guy. You've heard of him before, right?
Yeah.
So,
you guys are
anyway,
so
Brian, why don't
what's
you
up? The calliope crash to the ground.
Have you been drinking a little?
I'm just happy to be here tonight, man. I'll tell you what, I drove 4.5 hours from Rhode Island today, so I'm driving back home now after dinner. I'm probably a little punched. I'm not drunk. I didn't even drink,
yeah.
But damn, I'm tired. But it's all
yeah,
good.
Yeah, well, we'll get you through
that. Slap heavy.
So, Brian.
Yes.
Yep.
Some of our guests may not know who you are, and so I don't miss anything in your brief resume or your bio. Why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are, where you work, what you do, and why don't you go into what you're presenting this year at FDIC after you're all done with telling everybody who you are?
Yeah, sure. So, Brian Zeitz out of St. Louis, Missouri. Work in the suburbs of St. Louis County. been in the fire service, you know, started at a young age of 15 as a junior firefighter and worked my way up to now where I work in Kirkwood Fire Department as their assistant chief of training operations. Just like everybody's listening, everybody's calling in or everybody in the fire service, you know, just love the job, love what we do, love talking about the job, learning how we can be better at what we do, and then sharing everything that I've had the honor and privilege to, you know, learn and talk to and, you know, things I've been exposed to and opportunities and things like that, you know. So I'm very fortunate, and not everybody has those same fortunes, so I try to pass it on at the local level that, you know, maybe those departments that can't get people up to FDIC and those things. So, but that, you know, that's kind of a little bit about me. I still get up every day, love going to work, love, even though I'm in an admin job now, I love seeing the fruits of the labor, seeing the benefits on the line for the guys and gals, you know, through the things we're doing administratively. So a bit different, you know, I still would love to be on a truck running calls, but, you know, got pushed in a little bit different direction. So that's sort of where I'm at. FDIC, I'll be doing a 4-hour workshop on company officer keys to success for today's company officer on Tuesday afternoon. And that is, that's really my passion. You know, training, I love training. And then, you know, and the part of the training I really love is watching people develop, watching the light bulbs go off in people's heads when they can see their connections with other individuals. And I really think that company officer role is where that happens. You know, you are, that's probably one of the hardest leadership positions, in both the fire service, but probably in the world, just because you're living with people that you have to lead. And that's a different and difficult dynamic, to go through. So, but yeah, that's a little about me. Lucky to have met you guys over the years and, you know, call you cohorts, but mostly call you friends, and, look forward to just, you know, having a great discussion and, you know, looking forward to 3 weeks from now, hanging out with you guys.
Well, you left something out. Tell us a little bit about IFC.
Oh yeah. So ISFSI. Yes, absolutely. You know, been with the International Society of Fire Service Instructors for the past 8 years. Just got elected to the first vice president term. So I'll be doing that for the next 2 years. It's a great organization. You know, we're 1,800 members strong right now. Always looking for more members. We'll be up at FDIC going strong. I would encourage anybody that's in the fire service, anybody that's going to FDIC should be a member. First off, it's a great, you get 10% off just being a member for your rates at FDIC, so it pays for itself. But also, you know, the network of training instructors, the programs we're doing, we just got done, actually Thursday, we'll be doing our final class of understanding and fighting basement fires in Olathe, Kansas. That's been a regional delivery across the country. We've done, we just finished up 2 weeks ago at FDNY, did three programs up there, did a Boston fire, Fairfax, Sacramento, been across the country doing this program. So grant-funded program that we were very fortunate to team up with UL and NIST and deliver the knowledge on what we've learned with basement fires and the dangers associated with those and how we can approach those in a safe and efficient manner. We're getting ready to unveil a new class on NFPA 1700 and fighting structure fires. So that'll be another two-day regional delivery. Got another grant for that to put that program out there. But at the core, those programs are all great, but at our core really is how to be a good instructor. And we offer several classes on that, from a training officer credential class to a NFPA 1403 class on how to safely deliver live fire training in both a safe environment but also an effective environment for optimal learning. And that's a three-day class. So all those are opportunities and, you know, all opportunities to our members. So look us up. We'll have a booth at FDIC. So, you know, come check us out, come say hi, learn what we're about, and, you know, just hang out and see. I think for most people that are probably listening, and anybody in the fire service that's got any doubt, any bit of training in them or desire to train, it's definitely an organization for you.
Thank you, sir. Tonight, Chief of Illinois decided to talk about training and how coincidental that you're with us tonight. We're going to talk about training a little bit differently. And we're talking about chief officers and firefighters. The firefighters should be able to come to officer training and some of the chief's training to understand who their officers are and how they how they work and what an officer's job is. Because a firefighter doesn't know what a lieutenant has to do or a captain has to do every day paperwork-wise. But the flip side of that, which I feel really, really strongly about, is that the chief officers really should be at some of the excellent training that their firefighters are getting. Example, firefighters going out to do high-angle rescue using a Raptor or some other specialized tool on a cliff nearby or off of a building nearby. And the chief is in, I understand the chief has a lot of administrative things to do, but the chief stays in his office and doesn't know what they're learning and whether they're being taught properly. They don't occasionally visit with some of the instructors, both their own and outside. I'm going to give you an example, and then I'm going to kind of back off and let you guys chat. I'm sure you guys heard what happened at the New York State Fire Academy. The death.
Yep.
About,
yeah.
I'm going to say February, March of last year. The jury's still out, so I'm not going to talk any specifics. But I wonder if some of the chiefs who sent their newly hired career firefighters to a recruit class knew what was going on there. Boot camp type stuff, the yelling and how some of the new recruits were being treated. And I wonder if maybe it's sometimes one of the chiefs who sent their people there actually saw what was going on there, this possibly could have been prevented. Again, I don't want to throw stones. The jury's still out. The state says there was no action, but OSHA said there was a lot of things. You know, there's so much, and it's going to be discussed in the courts for years. But I think chiefs should be aware of the training they're paying for and what's going on. And I'll take that up one more level because this directly happened in my department. You guys both know Frank Discuso. The first place that Frank Discuso presented a class was for my department in Wallingford. Now, Frank came and did leadership training. Imagine that, Frank talking about leadership. But anyway, he came and presented a class on leadership, Step Up and Lead, the first version of it, as his book was just coming out. And our chief of training would not allow it. All the officers were required to go, but the chief of training would not allow the firefighters to go. He didn't want them there because he didn't want them learning the secrets of the managing and the leadership techniques we were learning. And I thought that was absurd. I was very, very upset by this. The second thing that I'm going to complain about there, we have a chief and two deputies, and none of them came to the training. Captains, lieutenants, and battalion chiefs were there, and they were mandated, but firefighters, well, in that group of firefighters, there'll be future officers, and I think they can learn how or what their officers do. So I'm going to throw this out to you guys. Chief Avillo, what's your feeling on firefighters knowing what officers know?
Well, Duff, one of the things that you had hit on was, think a great company officer, cadre, carries a fire department, but great company officers come from great firefighters. And I am always I always encourage, when fire departments, they bring me in to speak or something and say, oh, we're going to bring our officers in. I said, you know what? You should bring everybody in, because not only are there officers that that need to hear the word, but the firefighters who, will eventually become officers or operate as acting officers, they need to understand what's happening with what their officers do, their officers' responsibilities. And the other thing, as you just said, with the chiefs, that's one of the most sort of disappointing things I see out there when I teach out on the road.
you know, they'll bring you in, but they never show up. You know, I always say, like, you know, the those that need to hear the sermon the most are never in the church. And it's great that they bring you in to speak, but I think you need to speak to all ranks. And I think all ranks need to train together, you know, no matter what, you know, no matter what the subject is, there's, you know, input. There should be input from every rank. You know, there's nobody to say, well, you're only a firefighter and, you know, this is, you know, this is for chiefs and, you know, you don't have a place here. And I don't believe in that. You know, it's not one of the places that I came from, you know. But, yeah, I think that you need to train to all levels. You know, all levels need to be trained so that everybody understands what everybody else's responsibilities are. Because that I think, sort of makes it more of a whole, you know, because the department has to be a whole. So I think that's really important.
Brian, time for you to chime in on your thoughts of that as a training officer. I know you're not just a training officer. You have a lot of other things.
Oh, yeah.
But you're responsible for your department's training.
Oh, no. No, I think Avila hit it, you know, nail on the head. If you look at any high-performing winning sports team, right, you know, football, baseball, hockey, whatever, it doesn't matter. You know, when the team's practicing, the coach is always there, right? So you never see the team out practicing and the coach, you know, sitting in watching film. He's doing that afterwards for what he needs to also do his job. But he's making sure that those players know their job and to, you know, the perspective of what his role as the coach is to that team. And that's the same thing holds true. You know, you can host these trainings, you can bring guys in like yourselves and have these classes, but you know, what appearance, you know, perceptively does that put to the organization that, hey, I'm going to bring in Anthony Avila or Jim Duffy and have them talk about leadership or the importance of structure fires or, you know, how we attack a resident structure fire, whatever it might be. But then the command staff is absent from the training as though to say, this training is only good enough for you guys because I'm above that. You know, it just doesn't send the right message. And furthermore, and you guys have seen it, you've done these classes. Most of those classes, the best thing that comes out of them is a discussion. I mean, don't get me wrong, all our messages are good and the stuff we do, but it's that discussion, it's that facilitated discussion that occurs in that class that, you know, guys are starting to share ideas, and then they look around and they're like, well, we can talk all day long, but unfortunately any of the decision makers aren't at this class to actually hear what we have to say. So, you know, I think that's a huge misconception and a huge miss that a lot of departments sometimes make is, you know, you're paying a lot of money to bring guys in to have these classes, and yeah, they got a great message, but you know, for that period of time, you got your entire department potentially, you know, captivated on a topic. You know, optimize that for your benefit and have those discussions and facilitate discussions from an outside perspective and hear what they got to say, hear what they think, hear what their concerns are. And then, you know, if you're the command staff, offer your perspective on it. You know, it's your time to, you know, say one thing and get it out in front of your entire masses. So I completely wholeheartedly agree. You know, there's always time. There's always going to be tomorrow, but you can't make up for today. And so, you know, you got to capitalize on those opportunities. And training's a huge opportunity that's a lot of times missed because as command staff, we think there's something more important than. And quite honestly, second to calls, being with your crews at training is really the most important thing we have.
Yeah, awesome viewpoint. An example of that is most of the time, the chief officers, even battalion chiefs in some departments, their members are trained on new equipment. I'll talk about extrication equipment. So you get a new set of rescue jacks or different tools that when the battalion chief or the deputy chief or the chief of department, when he was a truck firefighter or a line firefighter, they never had those tools. And then they'll show up on a scene and they're using, I'll use an example, something very recent in my department, nothing happened with it, but they got a blitz fire nozzle. You guys know what a blitz fire nozzle is? Like a real quick setup for a deluge system that you put on the ground and, you know, it's a quick hit, 500 gallons a minute.
Absolutely.
And you can drop it in the driveway. So it was very new in our department. The very first time our chief of department saw it. He showed up at the fire at the same time as myself, and the truck company, the engine company, because there was a car in the garage fully involved, rapidly extending into the house. It was a split-level house, so the garage was under part of it, and it was cranking. So they dropped one in the driveway, and then they brought an inch and three-quarter through the front door. But the first time the chief ever saw the device was when he arrived and was standing next to me in front of the building. And no consequences, nothing happened. You know, he didn't get involved in it. But I think it behooves the chief to understand as new equipment changes. You know, you change from smooth bores to a variable nozzle or vice versa. Sometimes the people at higher levels were never used that. They didn't even exist when they were on the line. You know, if you've been a chief officer for 10 or more years, the tools that are on repelling systems, you know, Z-rigs and all the other technical rescue tools we have today that people never saw 15 years ago. And I think it's good to get out every once in a while. When I was working, I qualified on ropes and knots and haul systems once a year, just like all my people did. And I always looked stupid because I couldn't get out every day and train with them. But I made sure I did it, and I understood how it was working, because I may be calling the shot at a rescue. And if I don't understand how the equipment works, should I be the one calling the shots?
Mm-hmm.
That's a real question. Should I be, or should I just leave it down to the next level down? Just let the captain run it, and I go stand in the corner.
You know what's interesting? An interesting example of that is the transitional attack. You know, you get these guys that are, you know, these firefighters. Two things. Transitional attack, vent-end to search, you know, the concept of survivable space and defendable space and all that. And you get all this stuff that's sort of, you know, kind of buzzing through the fire service right now, all the guys that are really on top of their game. And you get these chiefs, and I've seen it. I've seen it a lot of places. And you get these chiefs where, you know, somebody says, you know, this is perfect for transitional attack. And they're like, what are you talking about? They don't even know what they're talking about, because they're, you know, it's almost like you put the eagles up on your collar and you're done learning. You're done advancing in the business. And anybody who advances or is looking to advance becomes a threat, you know. And the whole thing with the UL study. I saw it firsthand where, you know, and I can't name names because I don't want to do that, but I saw it firsthand where a division commander at the front of the building knew, don't break these windows until we have lines ready. They had 2.5-inch lines stretched. They had them stretched but not charged yet, and the incident commander came in, who was actually the chief of department, came in and said, I want those windows broken. And he's like, chief, we shouldn't break these, so we have water ready to go. You know, we need more water here to get this ready. He goes, I want them broken now, you know, et cetera, et cetera. They broke the windows, and the place took off like nobody's business. It damaged the aerial in front of the building. It trapped guys on the roof, and it was all because this individual, you know, who was in charge, didn't believe in or hadn't read enough about this sort of, you know, don't vent without water type stuff, or hitting it from the outside real quick before you go in. You know, I think that's a perfect example of sometimes, you know, when you talk about the higher up you go, the more your brains melt sometimes, and I think that's very, very true in the fire service. You have great company officers sometimes who are as solid as it gets. They're working for chiefs who have sort of abandoned the, you know, the moving forward of the fire service, you know. And and because they are superior to these people, they sort of, you know, quench their, you know, like quench their motivation, so to speak. So I think you see that a lot in the fire service, you know, and – It's It's kind of sad, but you're right. And I always say it, people need to hear the sermon most, but sometimes not in the church.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say that. One of the things that I talk about in the class I'm doing at FDIC is that this is not new. Bill Clark, in his book, 1972 was published by Fire Engineering. When should ventilation start? And this is a quote from his book. Normally, when water is up to the nozzle and not before. Period. 1866, James Briarwood, the chief of the London Fire Brigade. I'm sorry, he was the director of the London Fire Brigade. They didn't have chief. He said the same thing in 1866. So this isn't new. We lost it a little bit over the years. But none of this is new. So if you've been paying attention for a long time, you would realize it's not new. But because we're firefighters, we're stubborn, and we say, oh, this is all new bullshit that some scientist discovered out at UL. Well, it's really not. And, I mean, some of it is, but most of it is really things that I was taught in the 70s. You know, it's not that new. You know, we're full circle again. We're back to smoothbore nozzles all over the country now. You know, so, you know, Brian, are you still there?
Oh, yeah, I'm listening. No, it's great stuff. I'm just taking it all in with you guys.
I was going to ask you a specific question. How often when the members are doing, like, hands-on stuff, stretching lines, raising ladders, do you guys have a facility where you, with like a tower that you can train in?
Yeah.
On your own?
We do, yeah.
So how,
we got a tower.
How often are you with them when they do that? I'm sure not daily. The company offices are doing it on a daily basis. But how often are you with the members?
You know, it's not as much as I'd like to be, quite honestly. But, you know, once a month we do training together. Obviously, my role is the training officer, so I'm right there with them once a month and then try to get in sporadic company training. But, you know, that's not the norm, I'd say, for most chiefs, unfortunately.
No.
It seems to me, and like I said, I'm by no means a lot of experience in this stuff, but it just doesn't seem like once you get into that chief role to, you know, to Anthony's point is, you know, it's like it's not a priority anymore. It's like, you know, once you got a white helmet, all of a sudden you're like, you knew everything. And I've learned every day, and it's like, well, hold on a second. Like, if I don't know what those guys are doing and they're doing something, how do I know if it's right or wrong? You know, if I'm watching it, if I'm, you know, to your point of vendor search, I mean, I can tell you, you know, when I was a captain on a truck, I'd have chiefs pick, what's he doing? Why is he going in that window? What, you know, he doesn't have a hose line. It's like, no, he's going to vendor search. And literally they're like, what's he doing? Like, I've never heard of this. It's like, are you kidding me? Like, how, you know, so, you know, it's important if we're going to be in command of calls, you know, that we are as knowledgeable as what's going on the fire ground as anybody. And if we're not out there, like you say, you know, learning the stuff with our guys and learning about equipment, you know, we're getting ready to spec out some new nozzles, and, you know, I'll be right there with them next Wednesday. We got a whole demo day of it. And, you know, I'll be right there with them seeing why we're doing what we're doing and specing it out and all those things and learning what the ins and outs are. So I think that's absolutely critical. And if you know, for departments that can't send the chief, like the fire chief can't make every training and stuff like that, or the, you know, maybe it's a, you know, whatever, you know, fire marshals or, you know, these people that maybe can't make every training, right? If you can't, you know, try to make a concerted effort at trying to be there, if nothing other than visibility to be with your people, but also then talk to the chiefs that are going. You know, if you got battalion chiefs that are going to the trainings and you're, you know, whatever your role is in the organization, you know, make sure you're talking to those chief officers and saying, hey, what's going on? What's the new stuff? Like, you know, fill me in. So, because one, you'll lose credibility with your people. You know, you'll go to the fire station, stop by, say hi, and they'll be like, hey, you know, thanks again for getting us those new nozzles. And you look like an idiot when you're like, what, huh? New nozzles? Oh, okay, yeah, great. Glad you guys got them. And you don't know if it's a garden hose nozzle or a nozzle on a fire truck. So you got to stay attuned to those things. Otherwise, you lose relevancy and credibility to the organization. But, yeah, it means the world to the staff, the guys and gals actually doing the job, when the command staff shows up you know, one, it shows that you, you know, you respect what they do and the hard work they put in, but two, that, you know, you find value in what they do. And when you see that and you can, you know, relate that and you're saying thank you and, hey, this is, you guys are doing good work and stuff like that, you know, that goes a million miles towards morale in a firehouse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep. The last chief of FDNY, on a weekly basis, he would go ride with a fire company, you know, only for maybe a couple hours. He'd go, you know, have lunch with them, and then the run come in, he would get on the rig with them. Also, he would do it with the, because FDNY, they run the EMS as well. It's a separate division, and he would ride on an ambulance. Talk about gaining credibility with your members, and
yep,
that's such a useful thing. I have one more question for you, Brian. Do you,
uh-oh,
when you, you know, again, I'm asking because we did this in my department. We would do, we could burn in our towers, so we had some fire training, and sometimes it would be just a company. Sometimes it would be three companies. We would take the firefighters and put them in the role. So you would take a lieutenant and make him the incident commander. And you would take a firefighter and make him the lieutenant on the line. So the lieutenant on the line would make the calls with the crews inside. And if there was an officer, a lieutenant on that line, he was not allowed to talk. He would do what he was told by the firefighter who was acting as a lieutenant during that training. And it kind of, what I found, it gave the firefighters a newfound respect for what the lieutenants or the company officers have to do. And where it really made a difference was putting the firefighter in the role of the incident commander, making calls, assigning companies, not just where the line's going to go or where the ladder's going to go, assigning who's going to do search, who's going to do the water supply, who's, and doing those things. And they understand that the battalion chief or deputy chief's job is a little more complicated than they believe, and they learn a little bit more and how everything connects or is coordinated together.
We've done that. We have a acting officer program, a relief driver program, those sort of things. So yeah, when we do like full scale exercise training events like that down at the tower, we do them in a consortium effort with other agencies. So there's multiple agencies there. But we do. We'll take a captain oftentimes and put them in the incident command role as the, you know, maybe the first driving battalion chief. We'll put an acting officer in the fire, you know, officer seat of the fire truck, and vice versa. And if, you know, we'll have chief officers that maybe want to ride backwards or something just to get that perspective, right? So they get firsthand experience of what that guy's seeing. So none of us, you know, we can all kind of gain something. But I will say, you know, once you put people in some roles that they don't do every day, there's a large gain of, respect, if you will, for what those roles do and why they're important. You know, it's easy for firefighters and even company officers to be like, oh my gosh, the chief role, you just stand outside and, you know, basically just talk on a radio and write stuff on a whiteboard. And albeit some of that's true, there's a lot more to it, you know, from a strategic perspective. And so when they're actually forced to do those roles, you know, they understand when you're calling and say, I can't understand you, and you're getting frustrated inside, they know what that is. Same thing holds true. You know, you put a firefighter on, you know, in charge of a company, and they're making decisions and, you know, dictating where the line's going to go and how we're going to move and when we're going to, you know, do things and searching all, you know, and requesting additional resources. It's a lot more than just, you know, having that nozzle in your hand and moving your way to the fire scene. So I think it is good. It puts people outside their comfort zone. It challenges people, and it also develops people, your individuals, for the next level within your organization, which is always a win. So, yeah, I think, you know, when you can do those things, I mean, you don't want to make that the norm to where people are so uncomfortable that they don't get anything out of it. But, yeah, when you start to see growth, right, so, you know, through training we evaluate, we look at it, we're like, okay, you know, the training's good, you know, we're doing first and second due company drills. Everybody's doing well at it. All right, let's change it up. So we're gonna make a shift now to where we're gonna put people in some different roles. Scenario doesn't change, however, your role changes. So everybody knows the scenario, but they don't know their role. So that's when you can start to have some of that, you know, that, I guess, didactic learning, if you will, at those levels, right? So they know what they're supposed to do. It's just a matter of they can execute. And, you know, so that's a win.
Cool. Chief Avillo.
Yeah.
Still with us? Did you guys ever do that?
I am.
You do most of
your
stuff.
You know
stuff.
They did. North Hudson did it all.
Yeah, but they did a lot of their stuff at the academy, right? You did a lot of your training at the academy, not so much in local buildings. Is that true?
No, we only did the academy for Firefighter 1 and Firefighter 2.
Oh, okay.
Everything else was either training in the firehouses, or sometimes we get acquired structures that we would sort of, we'd either beat them up or we'd modify them for, you know, mass confidence type courses, things like that. We also would, we always tried to build on our training, you know, where you start from the simple and you go to the more complex. And we had these buildings that were, you know, these big buildings that we were allowed to work in. And we were doing pack tracker training in them where, you know, we would just tell guys to go get lost in there and let's see if we can find them. But one of the things, you know, you talk about getting involved. One of the things that we did was we would do our RIC training. And we would start off on the very simple, you know, things like just packaging and that sort of thing. And we work our way all the way up to where we would, you know, have somebody be, you know, in trouble in one of these big warehouses, and they would have to come in and ultimately blacked out masks and find the guy, package him, get him out, the whole RIC thing. And what I would do is I would play the victim. And they would come in there, and they'd be blacked out, and they would be beating the living crap out of me because they're trying to, you know, get you into, you know, a hasty harness, or they're doing the conversion of your SCBA. They're trying to change over your bottle. And these guys were all, you know, they were all blacked out, you know, and they'd already been, you know, halfway through the building using lifelines and, you know, trying to, you know, just get me out. And I got to say, you know, they were great at what they did, but you know, I earned a great respect, and I always told my other chiefs, you know what? You want to earn a great respect for what our guys do when somebody's in trouble? Play the victim, because I would play the victim, and they would beat the shit out of me. And it, not necessarily because they could, you know, and they wanted to, because that may have been some of them too, you know. But it was just, you know, here's the thing I always looked at. Always try to catch your people doing good things, you know. Mm-hmm. Always try to situations where you can give them the attaboy, you know. Don't ever short sell a come on man, you know. Don't short sell something like that. Don't look for those things to be picky, but I always tried to look for opportunities to, you know, let my guys know they were doing a great job, you know. And you know, that always, you know, when you can stroke them like that, that always pays a lot of great dividends, you know, especially when you have company offices and new company officers, you know. And, you know, but we, again, you need to try and sort of elevate your people. I remember when I was a firefighter and Chief Flood was my captain, he would have me do the drills for, you know, the other firefighters. And we had probies in-house before they went to the fire academy. He would assign the firefighters to do the drills. He would tell us what he wanted done. He would guide the whole thing, but he would assign the firefighters to do the drills, you know. And we used to do the same thing with our line of duty death roundtables. You know, the company officer was in charge, but the firefighters, he was encouraged to have the firefighters do all the presentations, you know. Always try and give a little more responsibility to the people below you so that, you know, when it's time, so you know who's who and who's not, you know, and you know who you can trust. And you know, and most guys will step up to the plate when you need that, you know. And I think that's really, really important, you know. And I think, you know, to bring this back around to the beginning of what we talked about, I think that it's important for the people below you to understand what your job is so that they kind of know what it is that you're doing and why you're doing it. And when they eventually get into that position, or if you use acting officers like we always did, you know, we are acting officers. Were expected to operate as officers. Our acting captains, our acting chiefs were expected to operate as chiefs. We had policies in place, and in our SOPs that said if you're an acting captain, this is what you do. If you're an acting chief, this is what you do. It was a little different than the chief's roles and responsibilities, but it wasn't too far off. And it was written out for everybody wanted to do it. And if you didn't want to do it, you know, and most guys did. Some guys didn't really care for it, and that's okay. You know, not everybody wants to elevate themselves, you know, and that's okay. But I thought that, you know, bringing that in place, and I always think you should know, and this is one of the things that my girlfriend Lee always said to me. I always wanted to know the job my boss was doing so that I could learn that, and when it's time for me to do it, I'm that much better at doing it than, you know, if I had never learned it before. You know, and I think that's, you know, she's not fire department, you know, but I think that, you know, is really, you know, sort of hits the nail on the head to me. Know what your boss does.
Yep. Sometimes, though, unfortunately, like you said, people are so defensive of their position or they're defensive of someone below them with a good idea or bringing knowledge or bringing innovation to the job. You're afraid of it. And one of the things, everything we've talked about tonight, how do you prevent that? Be informed. Know what's going on. Know what they're doing. I was very fortunate as a battalion chief because on overtime, because we're a small department, I could work as a truck boss or an engine boss.
Yeah,
I got fired.
I've never heard that before.
Yes,
but it was awesome because, you know, I was in the car at one point, 15 years, I was, and this kid, Lou, he only knew me in the car. About half the department only knew me in the car. And we got this snotty job. And he looked at me and he goes, you do know what you're doing. And I wanted to say something really sarcastic to him, like, how do you think I got here? But that's not always the case. But it gives you credibility. But it also keeps you excited about the job. You become a better incident commander because the longer you're away from it, I won't say the less you understand about it, but you don't have that feeling of what it's like to crawl down a snotty hallway and then stand out when it's 5 degrees outside.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yep.
A lot of neighboring departments and a lot of other battalion chiefs, they wouldn't put on their turn. I always wore my turnout gear. This way, if I was hot, I knew the men were dying. You know, but the thing about working down as well as them working up, it was really good. It didn't happen that often, maybe once a month, and maybe we'd get a job once a year or twice a year. But it felt so good when you did it. And, you know, and I would never let anybody see me sweat. You know, I'd be killing myself, you know, dragging a hose, but I would never let them, you know, they had to keep up with me, even though I was ready to puke, but they still had to keep up with me. You know, and it was kind of a pride thing, but it also, I don't want to see people, you know, taking it easy. If an old fart like me can do it, you can certainly do it. You're 26 years old and you're a CrossFit dude. You can do it, you know, but it was a great motivator for me. I may not have made the move up if I was never allowed to work on the line again. I don't know that, you know, but quite possibly. That's one of the hardest things where a lot of people don't move up. They don't want to move away from the line. They don't want to move off the job. Even me, my personality doesn't match an administrative position. I need to be running calls. I need to be with the guys. And that's for me. I'm not saying we need people to do that, but I would have been good at the task level, but I would not have been happy. And that unhappiness would show right down the line. So for me, staying where I was a very wise choice for me. Somebody like Brian, though, you know, he's obviously making a difference because he moved up to that level. You know, for me, it would have been difficult.
The nice thing is this operations training, you're still in, you know, calls. I still go on calls, and I agree. I can't see myself as a fire chief, you know, just because I just don't see myself as that. I'm not political enough to even understand that stuff. But, yeah, I'm the same. I like going on calls. I like being with the guys. you know, to Anthony's point earlier, you know, about, you know, looking for the attaboys in the stations, you know, when we stop by the stations, when you're in these cheap roles or whatever, I think it's important when you stop by the stations that you have time to these guys. And, you know, when you're going in, and if you, every time you go in, you're like, oh, my gosh, the station's dirty. Oh, my gosh, your truck's dirty. Oh, my gosh. They're not going to look forward to you guys coming in. So, you know, to your point, look for the good stuff they're doing. Hey, you guys are, you know, whatever. Even if it's something small, like you stop in the afternoon, they're working out. Hey, great to see you guys working out. You know, thanks for, you know, staying in shape. It, you know, makes a difference for the community. You know, and then take a few minutes and sit there and talk to them, you know, about whatever. And that goes a million miles. Because I remember I wasn't that long ago, I was on a truck. And, you know, if a chief came by and was actually valued, interested in what we were doing, it really made a difference versus they're just coming by to nitpick.
Yeah. The last thing, listen, there are times when you have to, you know, make statements that, you know, that are going to make you unpopular, or things that, you know, listen, you're a representative of the organization. The most important thing for an officer to do, and whether that's a chief or a company officer, might be even more difficult for a company officer, is to balance organizational loyalty with social loyalty. You know, you got to be able to balance those two. When they're out of whack, when your social loyalty is it more in a direction of, you know what, I will take the, you know, I don't have there's no accountability to my personnel below me, you know, because, you know, I want them to be happy, you know, ice cream for everybody. That can't be out of whack with your organizational loyalty, which is, you know, the job, you know, and at the end of the day, when organizational loyalty crashes up against social loyalty, organizational loyalty wins every time. But that having been said, you know, you have to be able to balance those things. And I think, you know, if you're looking to do the right things and you understand your roles and responsibilities, the most, you know, you understand that, you know, the job has to move on. The job is bigger than everyone. But that having been said, we're also all part of the job. And, you know, you have to be able to balance those things. That's important.
So listening to both you guys, it sounds like you're both saying, and myself, all three of us are saying the same thing. A lot of this can be bridged at training. If we invite, I'll say subordinates, to some of the upper level training, and I'm talking right now didactic stuff, classroom stuff. You invite them in and some of the slides and the speakers that are talking about leadership and long-term strategies, you know, like your five-year plan or something like that. Let the members be part of that. Maybe a SWOT analysis or something to bring the members in to discuss where they see the fire department after the chief's all gone. Get them to be part of the more of the upper level stuff. But also, and where I see it, because I'm traveling around teaching a lot, and Anthony echoed the same thing, with the chiefs are not coming to the training. A department not far from me hired me recently within the last couple of months, and none of the chief officers were there. You know, and I thought it was very, very sad. They paid me some money. They brought me in to talk to their people, and they didn't show up, you know, so I could ask them their opinions or, you know, so I think that's sad, and they made comments about it. You know, they even said the same thing Chief Avila said about those that need to sermon aren't in the church. So the members recognize.
Yeah, the members always recognize that.
They may not
say it. It's
obvious. Yeah, they know. Even if you're only there for 15 minutes and you know, you get paged and you go to your office and you don't come back for the rest of the training, but you were there. They'll remember that, but they'll remember more when you're not there. They definitely notice. You bring somebody in from out of state to teach and the chief doesn't even come into the classroom. And I think that's, it says a
or
lot about
the chief. Lunch.
Right. I'm not even, but even that is good to have the chief to sit down. And I understand, I don't know if you guys call them a day room or kitchen table,
for the chief to come in and sit down, and I'm not saying spend the whole hour there or hour and a half with the members at the kitchen table. Come, have lunch, talk with them a little while, but the time at the kitchen table, that's their room. And I've always thought it was their room. As a battalion chief, I always ate with the men. I would exchange a few jokes with them and pleasantries, you know, because they were my friends. But I would also leave because there are things that I should not be allowing to happen. You know, off-color jokes, things like that. And if they want to bitch about me and bitch about the chiefs, that's okay. That's their space and their time. So spend some time with them. Have lunch if they're getting a movie on a night shift. You sit and watch the movie, but then go back to your office. You know, let them have their time. What do you think about that?
You have to be part of the kitchen. You know, you got to be part of that. But you cannot be, you can't be. There's a time to be in the kitchen and a time the kitchen belongs to everybody, but more so it belongs to the group itself, you know? And
yes.
And if you're in the kitchen all day long as an officer, then you probably aren't officering it up because you're hanging in that kitchen all the time. And so sometimes you're becoming a detriment to what's happening there. It's almost like when you have a chief that micromanages everybody on the scene and he tells every single company what to do. So he operates at the task level when he should be operating at the strategic level. Well, the same thing happens in the kitchen. You know, when you're in the kitchen as a chief officer, sometimes you might get dragged down to the task level. Where the kitchen talk and that's okay. But if you're there all the time operating at that sort of task level in the kitchen, if you kind of catch my drift, I'm using like a metaphor, I guess.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Then, you know, you're going to compromise your authority at some point. Your authority has to remain your authority. You know, while you are one of the guys, you're not. And because you
Absolutely.
Have those things up on your collars, you never will be. However, you need to find the balance between organizational loyalty and social loyalty. You know, so it comes with experience, I think, you know. And I think that, when people are willing to learn and willing to put the organization first, then they find that balance.
Yeah, you know what? You're always the chief. Whether you're acting like a chief or a social member, you're always the chief.
Somebody's going to hold you accountable.
Yeah, but not even that. The members are not free to be themselves because they look at me as their supervisor in that position, even though I'm not there as a supervisor. So be social, spend your time, talk about it. If you're talking about a fire you were at last week or the fire that shift two fucked up, you know, sorry, Bobby Walton would get upset at me for saying that, but shift two didn't poor job. And that's not good either. You know, you got to try to prevent your guys from bashing other groups, you know. So, but still, let them be them, you know, without a pseudo chief in the room. If you know, that's a bad way to say it, but you're always the chief, so you're always their supervisor. So sometimes they just want to be clowns. I'm not talking being dangerous clowns or, you know, racist stuff, but sometimes they just want to be big dopes and have fun, and I don't want to stifle that. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. You know, you have to be able to separate yourself from those things. And, you know, as long as they're operating within good judgment and good taste and everything like that, it's all good, you know. But, yes, as a chief, sometimes you got to let the Indians be the Indians, you know.
Brian, you're awfully quiet over there.
No, it's, you know, it's the same. I was just listening and taking your guys' in, your knowledge, experience. It's great. I love listening to you guys talk. I agree. You know, it's their firehouse. And, you know, we control what happens in the firehouse. But I, you know, to your point, you got to give, especially with some of these rotations, like we run a 48-hour shift, you got to give some guys some space to vent a little bit within a controlled manner. I mean, they can't be bashing the place and off color, but you got to let them have the opportunity to say a few things that may not be appealing. And to your point, too, it's, you know, if you're officering it up and you're just hanging out in the kitchen and just being one of the fellas, well, then you're probably not being an officer. So, you know, I think it's about – I think it's, you know, Jimmy will appreciate this. It's about balance. How about that? We'll allude to that. You got to have balance.
Yes, sir, you do.
That is
good. I have to agree. It's not always easy to find the balance, though, you know.
Yeah. Yep.
It's difficult.
Listen, one of the most important things that I always looked at was, and this is a thing from Flood 2, is the what we call the prime directive. You know, nothing interferes with your ability to maintain your in-service and ready status of your command, your equipment, your personnel, whatever it happens to be. But one of the most important things about that is it runs in – one of the things with a company officer is a company officer is – he's the pivotal piece in the fire department, you know. He's the best foot forward most of the time or the worst foot forward. He has to answer up. He has to be able to support and answer downward sometimes. But the idea with that is that whole prime directive is you need to make sure that the people who work for you understand that prime directive, because those are the guys that sometimes are going to see that first when, you know, the in-service and ready status of your company is being forecasted to be compromised, you know. And but sometimes by the time, especially if I have an officer who's not paying attention, sometimes by the time that officer figures that out, you know, it's beyond, you know, incipient stage issues. You know, now you're dealing with, you know, flashover and fully developed issues, you know, and that always takes more time, more people, more danger, more injury to the organization, you know. So the more that company officer can involve his people and bring them into the game, the more that they can help him not only do his job, but do the work of the entire department.
Yeah, I love that analogy. You know, the stages of fire: incipient, flashover stage, fully developed, and then to add one more on top of that, then it becomes a defensive fire and a surround and drown. And sometimes it may be too late, and you're going to do the Avillo famous bulldozer overhaul the next day. You know, and you may lose a good employee.
Yeah,
I'm
like
talking
that.
About.
Yeah, go ahead, bro. Go ahead, Brian.
The in-service and ready, I use a story that I stole from you because it happened in your fire department. Tell everybody that story about the speedy dry and how it delayed a response because someone did not replace
okay.
the speedy
well,
dry after.
Yeah, I tell this story during the full contact leadership class, but there was on a Friday night, one of the companies went down to an area near the Meadowlands in North Bergen, down a place called Tumley Circle, and probably about 3 a.m, and they used all the speedy dry, and they come back in quarters, and the next morning comes around, and the captain passes on to the oncoming shift that they need speedy dry. And the oncoming shift captain acknowledges it, and the speedy dry is kept in the 3rd Battalion. This company was in the 1st Battalion, so they would have had to go off duty to go get the speedy dry, which is not a big deal. You know, when nobody's off duty in a battalion, anybody can go off duty, and, you know, and sure, of course, they would have told the battalion or whatever. But the 24 hours goes by, and they don't get the speedy dry. And there are a million different reasons why they might not have gotten the speedy dry. You know, they were too busy. And in reality, it probably dealt more with some other issues such as laziness. They just laziness. That, you know, that's all it was. To me, it was laziness. And the other end of it was just speedy dry. And what could possibly happen? But you always have to have what we'll call an imagination. Because failure of imagination has, you know, sunk many ships. And that's a metaphor, right? But what happened was the guy doesn't get the speed drive for the 24 hours. And the next morning my shift is coming in. And I come in, and I come in early, and I'm doing the staffing and seeing where overtime's needed or details are needed. And I hear engine one going out of quarters down, you know, down to Tumley Avenue. You know, Tumley Avenue's a, you know, a place where, you know, MBAs and all that. But they go down there for a spill. And the next thing I hear is them calling for speedy dry. And I don't know anything about what happened the day before. And the deputy knew nothing about what happened the day before. That was, I was relieving, and he was still in the rack. So I hear them calling for speedy dry. And I'm like, why would they need speedy dry? You know, unless they used it on the overnight. You know, I don't know, you know. So engine four comes out of my firehouse in Union City down into North Bergen to assist engine one with speedy dry. And while engine four is out of quarters, we get a response for a reported fire. Now, our quarters were on 29th and Central. On 29th and Summit, we wound up with a two-alarm fire. There was a report of people trapped. Nobody was trapped, but it went to a two-alarm fire. And the first due engine was not available because they were delivering speedy dry to an engine that didn't get it over a 24-hour shift. So when you talk about the unintended consequences of inaction, lack of action, you know, failure to do the right thing, you know, all this stuff kind of comes into play, you know, and the bottom line is do your friggin' job, you know, do your job. And, you know, that was, you know, unintended consequences of, you know, and failure of imagination. Nobody ever could have thought not getting the speedy dry could have led to a first due engine not being available for a reported fire or people trap. But, you know, it's just how many ways do guys get killed or hurt in this business, you know? Don't suck at doing your job. That's the bottom line right there. Don't suck at doing your job. It's easy. Just do your job.
Yeah. Isn't that Bill Belichick said that at the get that in the stadium up there with the Patriots? As you walk in, it's like the one thing they do, just do your job. Bill Belichick
just
says
do
that.
Your job.
Do your
yeah,
job.
Maybe. He's a cheater, but maybe.
He's a cheater, maybe.
Let's go Rangers, by the way.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
Here
we
got Cardinals. Go.
Get
heck
with
here
the Rangers.
Go.
Let's go Yankees.
Points, baby.
You come to St. Louis. Let's go to Cardinal game.
Oh, what about
I have been
weekend?
To baseball games. I have been to baseball games in St. Louis and then went to the Spaghetti Factory.
To baseball games in St. Louis.
Oh, yeah, delicious.
I've been to baseball games in St. Louis. What a great place to see a game, man.
Yeah.
I was in the old stadium, though.
Okay.
Yep.
Good
right
game.
Downtown.
Well, isn't the new stadium right downtown also?
Yeah, same spot. Same location. Just they moved. They built a new ballpark village all around it. And, yeah, it's a good. It's a great venue. Awesome spot. Good time to go down there. And even if you can't get to the game, the atmosphere around there is just incredible during game day. So, good time.
Yeah, we were down there about. I'll tell you what, it was 10 years ago. It was my 50th birthday. A whole bunch of buddies of mine came in from California and a bunch of different places, and we said, you know what, where do we meet? Center of the country. Let's pick a place. And we went to St. Louis, and we caught a couple of Cardinals games. It was right when I don't know if you're a really big Cardinals fan, but they were at it was like their worst weekend. They had a catcher pitching, and then right after that, they went on that tear that took them to the World Series.
Yeah.
And that was
you were 2011?
Yeah. Yeah. It was 2011.
Yep.
Exactly, because I'm 60 now. So it was my 50th birthday, and a bunch of my friends, we all met in St. Louis.
Chief Avello,
awesome.
You just brought
but
in the entire sub.
What's that?
You brought a Cardinals game into our discussion tonight, training outside of your normal duty. You got catchers pitching. So just like we were talking about having lieutenants and captains acting as battalion chiefs and firefighters acting as lieutenants.
There you go. Look at you, Duff.
So
pulling this all together.
I don't know how you segued that into this conversation, but that was awesome.
I don't either.
That's you guys cease to amaze me. You guys just cease to amaze me.
You didn't even know you did it.
No, I didn't. I just started talking about the Rangers.
Who? So listen.
It's all good.
I'd like to, as we get close to the end here, Chief Avillo, summarize what tonight's discussion was. Actually, let Brian, why don't you summarize what you thought and what your feelings on the subject we chose to discuss tonight?
Well, I think you guys chose probably one of the most important topics of fire service. It's training, you know, and, you know, I think that it's, I think that, you know, the one thing I think everybody can take away from this is there's no rank that's outside of training. It doesn't matter what your rank is. You can always learn and you should always be learning. And so, you know, make a concerted effort to attend training, no matter what your rank or your position is in the fire service.
And how does that benefit the organization? How do you think it benefits the organization?
I think it increases knowledge, you know, organizational knowledge as to what everyone's doing in the organization. It gives everybody a great idea of what everyone is doing for the organization and where everybody's part is. I like to say that, you know, the chief walks in the room and people are like, well, who's the most important in the room? You know, I always do that sometimes in class. I'm like, hey, who's the most important in this room? And, you know, I always joke. I'm like, well, it's got to be me. I got the clicker, right? And it's not. You know, everybody in the room has an equal responsibility to the organization. It's just a matter of what your responsibilities are that you're getting compensated for, if that makes sense. So just because you're the newest person on the job doesn't make you less valuable to the organization, nor does being the fire chief make you the most valuable person in the organization. So, you know, taking time to go to training, taking time to spend with crews during training, learning what everyone's doing, you know, doing what you would do during a normal incident related to training. And then, you know, if you can get yourself a little dirty during training, you know, I think it benefits with morale, it benefits with knowledge, experience, gets you street credibility. It's a win-win-win all the way around for the organization when you do that. It doesn't have to be every month, doesn't have to be every week, doesn't have to be every day. But it's got to be some type of routine so that, you know, it's not the oddity that you're there, it's more of the normalcy that you're there.
Look at that. I knew we weren't wasting our time with you, Brian Zay.
Oh, come on.
You know,
I've been asking for that for 3 years since I got there. I haven't got one yet. I'll let you guys bend his elbow when you guys see him at FDSC. Maybe you guys got some more influence than I do with him.
That was very well said, man. That was very well said.
Nice job there, Brian. Chief of Villa.
Thanks, fellas.
Yes, Chief Duffy.
Now it's your turn to give me a summary of your thoughts and what's going on. Also, at the end of your summary, why don't you tell everybody what you're teaching at FDIC this year and what that's.
Okay. Well, I think the idea what we looked at here is, you know, nobody gets left behind in training. There is time for chief officer training. There is time for company officer training. There is time for firefighter training. But there is more time for training of all personnel, you know, at the same time. You know, everybody needs to know what everybody else is doing in this business so that they know where they fit in to the organization, you know. And, you know, I think that is the most important takeaway that we get here tonight. You know what? If you're a firefighter and there's company officer training going on, ask if you can be involved. If you're a chief officer and there's training going on that your department is doing, whether it's a guest speaker from outside or something else, and you're not getting involved, shame on you. You need to get involved. You need to be able to, you're involved on a fire ground, so you need to be involved on a training ground, you know. So I think that's the message here tonight, you know. And what am I doing at FDIC? I am doing a classroom session only this year. I am doing a class. It's a new class. It's called Strategic Decision Making. And it is, of course, based on the Fireground Strategies book, although a good deal of it is based on the fourth edition, which I am hoping will be coming out, you know, within sooner than later, I guess. I'm not completely finished with it, but, you know, I've been, you know, kind of looking at things and, you know, why do we choose strategies and what causes us to choose strategies and what causes us to change strategy? So, you know, some of the things that we're going to talk about are all going to be about that, you know, sort of based on my own sort of, you know, experiences, trial and error, mostly error. But, you know, that's okay. If you haven't ever made mistakes on a fire ground, then you haven't been on the fire ground. But I'm really looking forward to it. It's Wednesday, right after the opening ceremony at 10:30. I don't know exactly what room it's in, but it's called Fire Ground Strategies, Strategic Decision Making. It will be sort of a preview of the upcoming fourth edition. There, of course, will be some full contact leadership in there. But, again, I'm humbled and grateful to Clarion and Penwell for choosing me to be part of the FDIC again.
Awesome. And listen, Brian, I want to chime in on some of the things you said, the most important person in the room. I love that. I think that's a great thing to discuss. And I'm going to steal a little bit from Alan Brunicini as well. Mrs. Smith doesn't care whether the chief of department's budget is balanced, whether he has to talk to the mayor later that day, or he has to do some reports. She's just happy that the guys that show up on the big red fire truck with all the specialized equipment and or the ambulance, and they make her problems go away. The most, they don't care if there is a chief. They just care that the firefighters get there. The firefighters are the most important people on the job. We need all the chiefs. Don't misunderstand me. They're a necessary part of the fire service. But the chiefs aren't doing the job on a day in and day out basis. They're doing their job, and don't misunderstand me. I am truly appreciative of some of the chiefs I've met and worked with. But the woman or gentleman dialing 911 doesn't care about that. They don't care about the long-range planning. They don't care. They care that you're going to make the worst day of their life go away quickly and efficiently. So training up and training down will help that happen on a regular basis more often. Some of the situations we've all talked about today, you know, the speedy drive. Well, if we thought about how that would impact the whole organization, that wouldn't have happened. New tools that you're the person in charge and you've never seen those tools before, because they were only put in service 6 months ago. You never got a chance to go down with the men and see how it works, you know. So I think training up and down is so important. I also, where I personally feel it makes a big difference, you want your men to respect you and believe in you. If you show up and then show them respect that you believe in what they're doing when they're out there training, your relationships will be better, not only on the fire ground, but in labor relations and discussions that way, union issues. If you realize that you're all on the same team, a lot of that stuff gets a little easier to handle. And I think it's really, really important. Just being the guy locked in your office in the corner and only coming out when you need something special done is not good for the organization. And to the members at the bottom and the newer members, you know what? You may see things that us people who've been in the fire service for a lot of years would never see, but because you come from a different world. Someone asked on the internet the other day about what kind of extrication software do you use? And I was like, what? What is he talking about? And I got a hold of this person and asked him, well, there are applications for your phone or your iPad. I can tell you if you have an accident with Tesla, where the point that you should do your extrication are at, or you're at a Hyundai of some type, it'll tell you where to cut and where not to cut, where the best access to the victim is on different types of crashes. So I would have never thought about software, but a 20-year-old kid coming in their fire services talking about software to find out where to cut certain cars at an accident on the highway. So, you know what? They're bringing a new point of view that we can all learn from. So learning goes up and down.
That's good stuff, Duff. I didn't realize that helps for that kind of stuff. That is
awesome. I was actually chuckling. I go, what's this jerk talking about software to do an extrication? You know, and I was like, I got to call this guy and find out what. And I was actually almost laughing at him when I saw it. So shame on me. And if someone brought that up to my firehouse, I may have laughed. So again, shame on me. But they view the world very differently than us, although software's not the answer, and the phones aren't the answer to everything. But, you know, there's diagrams that you can do really quickly on your phone. You know, you drag in one in and you put them in rehab just by moving your finger on your phone. And so things like that I never would have thought of while I was in the job, but it's out there now. So, like I said, we can all get each other. Yep, and so I have to give a plug for my class at FDIC. I'm teaching Fighting Today's Private Dwelling Fires. It's just a routine house fire, or is it? I'm doing that on Thursday at 10:30, right after the ceremonies Thursday morning, and looking forward to it, as always, and the people at FDIC, Diane, Bobby, Ginger, and all the people who came before us, you know, Tom Brennan, especially, you know, it's, you know, so much happens out there. All this training and learning, we're all talking about it right now. FDIC brought me to a much higher level than I ever would have dreamed of. I didn't start getting involved with FDIC and fire engineering. So those of you who are listening, think about getting out there. And if someone out there has a class that they think might be interesting to other people, submit for it for next year. It'll be coming out probably in May or June, looking for proposals to teach next year and about doing it. You'll talk to other instructors and maybe give me some ideas. No, so FDIC is awesome. And Chief Avila, one thing I have to say that I say every show, if you have an opportunity or a choice between buying something made in the United States or made overseas, try to make a conscious decision to buy made in America. Most firefighters, their salary comes from taxpayers. If people aren't working, they don't pay taxes. Your fire department, you do fundraisers, so your equipment comes from taxpayers. So if you can buy American, if you can buy a baseball cap that's made in the United States for a dollar more, think about spending that buck. Computers, you can't buy a computer made in the United States. But, you know, when you have a choice, please try to buy American. We can say the economy sucks because we can say the economy sucks because they're Republicans. The economy sucks because of us. You know, we keep making choices not to buy American. That hurts American workers. So I know you can't always do it, but think about it when you're making significant purchases or even small purchases. And
one last thing, Duff.
Yes?
I actually forgot to mention I have an article in this month's Fire Engineering coming out, the April edition, and it is about my class. So,
hey, I got one
to let everybody
too.
Know. You got one too?
Awesome.
Yeah. Mine's not on my class. Mine's on dumpster fires.
Listen,
so
I used
to
sleep
class,
in those things.
Hey,
I have a question for you. Speaking of dumpster fires, do you go lights and sirens to dumpster fires?
No. We do as the department. Yeah, it depends on where it's at. If it's a kind of exposure to it, yes. If not, no.
Well, if you have an exposure. But I always tell people, they threw it out. Calm down. If you got
take
an exposure,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, if your dispatch is doing a good job and they find out where it is, it's, you know, 100 yards from a building, you know, don't sweat it. You'll get there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, looking forward to seeing both of those articles. And you know what? The funny thing about firemen
is night and day. They're always firemen.
Who was that?
Donald Sutherland.
That's right. Playing who?
Oh, Ronald. Ronald.
Ronald. That's it. Yeah. Just Ronald.
Ronald.
Ronald. Yeah, so anyway, Brian, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you guys. Appreciate the offer.
Brian.
Yeah.
You know, it's a fun show. I think it was all important. Not too scripted. Not scripted at all, actually.
Not scripted at all. Like a psychotic horse heading toward a burning stable.
Yes, that's true. But I had a good time talking to both of you. And, I have to tell you one thing. I don't know if I told either one of you guys this when we were out in Missouri. I guess I'm starting to look older. I was out shoveling snow, and my neighbor said to me, "Are you sure you should be doing that?"
Wow.
I was like, ouch.
Wow. That hurts.
Ouch. I was like, now I am your grandbrother, Avillo.
You,
but anyway.
Little so, me, bro. You actually, always have been.
Yeah, but you know what? You guys, I'll see you in a couple of weeks. To the rest of our listeners out there, we'll see you next month. So we'll see you guys around April 22nd?
Something in the 25th.
Yeah,
24th. Yeah, 24th.
24th, it starts. So really looking forward to it. Yeah, it's 2 weeks away. I'm spending the next week down in North Carolina, coming home for 2 days, and then going out to Indianapolis.
Nice.
So we'll see you there. Are you guys doing a fun run on Thursday?
Of course. I always do. It's usually a fun walk, though. But
I don't run well.
I think I'm getting to that.
I
think I'll officially be doing the 5K walk this year.
Yeah, it's usually a fun walk.
Yes, sir. Okay, everybody listening and to my two guests, my one guest and my partner, till next month, stay safe.
Thanks,
fellas.